freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go. It's Brock and Salk Podcast coming at you. Hi, buddy.
Dude, is training camp really like a week away?
I don't know. Is it?
Yes. 6 days?
That's right. This. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say days, weeks, hours, time on podcast.
Is it? Could be any time.
Yeah, we live in the galaxy.
So does the training camp. Training camp could be at any moment. Could be this second.
Someone listened to this in September.
It already happened.
Oh, my God.
There's a bunch of teams. What, four teams already that reported on Tuesday.
Summer just started. What are these guys doing? It's too early. I'm not ready for that yet.
No,
I need a little
you
time.
Can't do that. You can't.
I can.
That. No, you can't.
I can.
No, you will not.
I watch
me. It has been the summer of Salk.
It's been
one of the most beautiful summers. And you will not do
that. I want it to go on forever.
You will not.
This has been the greatest summer of all time. My kids and my wife were all gone. Then my wife came back. My kids are still gone. There's been golf. There's been warm weather. It's been tremendous.
And now it's over. It's misting this morning. Last night was the last sunset after 9 p.m.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine this afternoon. You
training camp is right around the corner.
Don't start depressing. I love football, and you know how much.
You're gonna be up at 5 a.m.
You know what,
be down
dude?
At the VMAC.
Dude, why don't you tone it down? Why don't you just relax, or we'll start fighting
back over here.
I don't want to fight back. I don't want to get to that point. I'm in a great mood.
Summer Salk.
Can we talk about the Richard Sherman thing? Because this, you know, there are things that happen when you do a weekly podcast where you're like, gosh, I wish I was doing this right now. Like, this is one of those stories with so many tentacles and angles and everything else. I will admit, I'm kind of glad we weren't talking about it day one before the information came out and we were trying to figure out kind of what was happening. Because there was, you know, look, I understand the, you know, how important the words domestic violence have been to me, and we've talked about it so much on this show. Calling this, you know, throwing the words domestic violence in here, while not necessarily wrong, is a little bit misleading, because at no point did Richard hit or even really apparently threaten his wife or his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Family members?
Yeah, his
in-laws?
In-laws, father-in-law. I mean,
there's still plenty of information. There's some 911 calls that have plenty
of
threatening
he
language.
He allegedly said, if you come to this house without the kids, I will hurt you.
All right. So there's
a threat.
But that's not what the charge is for.
That's right.
The charge is against the uncle.
I'm not trying to clear Richard Sherman here of wrongdoing. We're going to have quite the conversation about kind of where he's at, how we feel about him and everything else. But it was interesting. Day one, when the first words you hear are domestic violence burglary, it sounds very much, and my first thought, and I'm sure the first thought of many people was, okay, Richard Sherman beat up his wife or beat up his kids, because that's generally what we think of when we hear that term. And I guess it was interesting to me that was not the case. Now, it turns almost more, it becomes much more unique once you learn all the details of everything that's happened here.
You're a very initial response. And I think you texted, right? I think we had some information and our news gathering team on the Cairo side, even before, I think, you know, I mean, we saw this very early that day. Your just initial emotion.
I'm trying to remember it now. It's been a while. Well, do you remember my initial reaction? What was it?
You just kind of forwarded the text. And I think those words, as you said, of knowing you, Mike, the way that we've all gotten to know you and you and I in proximity and closeness and everything for all of these years, those words, domestic violence, they hit
home. Well,
yeah,
that's a trigger word for me, for sure. There's no doubt about it. And so when I first thought it was that, I was, you know, I was pretty upset and assumed this is going to be the end. But as you read through it, I don't want to focus too much on the reaction based on
the initial reports.
Yeah, initial reports that don't necessarily explain the entire story. I guess what I see now is a really tough balance between a sad story about a guy who seems to need help, seems to have some level of psychological problems, seems to be struggling greatly with dealing with his exit from the league, which may be impending. See, really needs help and sympathy and support and needs to be, you know, helped. Again, I'll say it again. And at the same time, somebody committed crimes, and the crimes don't go away because that's somebody that needs help.
Correct.
Right? Driving under the influence, crashing into construction sites, banging on the door, trying to knock it down with your shoulder, right? Threatening to kill yourself if you don't get custody of your kids or control of the kids. All of those things are 100% crimes. They don't deserve sympathy. So trying to strike that balance between how you feel about this guy, where you want to help and support, and where, quite frankly, you don't, I think that's the biggest challenge and what makes this thing so interesting.
Well, and then you have to add an incredible layer to that that makes it even more complex, and that is we know this guy. This isn't an NFL headline in a different city with another player. This is arguably one of the loudest, most brash players that we have ever had in the sports community.
It's inarguable. He is the loudest and most brash player we've had.
Gary Payton would argue with that a little bit because he spent a lot of time.
Gary would lose. Gary might be louder on the court, but he would lose that argument, I believe, off of it.
That's probably fair. Yeah, I think that's fair. That in whatever vein, Richard was always right. He was also polarizing because the exit was hard. Because, you know, on tape, having him lying, calling out things that
well, he's
you know,
a liar. I mean, that's part of you can't overlook that part of the story. Richard Sherman has what I've referred to as a very casual relationship with the truth.
He's a pathological liar.
He's a liar.
Fact.
I mean, we caught him in a million of them, like where he had tape. Of the exact opposite. Remember when he went on with, was it Lisa? Who was the
Carrie Champion?
Carrie Champion.
Did you feel like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have said what I said?
No, because nobody ever knew what I said. Once again, sources say, no, who was there? Did anybody see it?
You know,
who was there?
Who said, who
so
said
it was not correct.
No, nobody knows.
But we do know because it was on tape.
Who was there? There were 50 people there, Richard. What do you mean, who was there? What? It's on tape.
How about Kyle with the Carrie Champion pull like that?
Well, we were watching that at spring training. Kyle and I were sitting with Shannon watching that thing. I remember it.
What is this man talking about?
I'm pretty sure that's the same night they gave out the wrong Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
Or very close. I think it was at the same house.
Who's talking about you, Richard? What are you talking about?
He's just wrong. I mean, like, that's the thing. So, you know, when you've already established yourself on tape, definitively, as a flat-out liar.
I've ruined your career. You're going to ruin my career?
Yeah.
Are you going to do that?
Make sure you don't get your meeting pass anymore.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not the greatest audio that proves that he's a liar, but it does prove it if you listen very carefully. How much sympathy and how much benefit of the doubt do you get in a case like this?
Correct.
Where you've already shown that you're a liar. And long before you were exiting the league, right? This was years ago he had proven to be a liar. So I find myself vacillating, honestly, back and forth on this thing. On one hand, I see a guy who clearly seems to be more like having what appears to be some sort of a mental break and is crying out for help.
Yep.
And on the other hand, and I want to ask you, Brock, how indicative you think that is in the NFL and in other sports. And on the other hand, a guy that I know is a liar.
Correct.
An absolute 100% liar who committed a whole bunch of crimes that put other people's lives and health in danger.
And who, by the way, also is one of the greatest Seahawks to ever play, that brought as much joy to this city, to this fan base, to our radio show, to our ratings, to the success in our market.
All true.
Right? I mean,
so let's attack all three of these things one at a time.
Yeah.
Let's start with the sympathy card and what's happening with Richard Sherman's mental state right now. Neither of us are psychologists. Let's put that out there right away.
Well, I majored in psychology.
Neither of us have talked to him about this. Heck, he blocked me on Twitter years ago. I don't even get to see what Richard has to say about things most of the time because for whatever reason he blocked me. But trying to look at the case in general, Brock, what do you see?
Well, is this under the arm of the brokenness and just that's what I see. That's what I listen to those tapes. I have flashbacks to many, many of my teammates whose exit, as you said, from this league is incredibly difficult. The longer you're in it, the more fame you have, the more identity is wrapped around you as a football player. Guess what? the infinitely harder it becomes to separate yourself from that. And when that door closes on you, and I think that's a bit of what this process is, he still deems himself an incredibly valuable asset, one of the greatest corners to ever play, if not the greatest, and one that's certainly still deserving of a huge salary and should command that. And the market says, sorry, you know, this is the league and Father Time's caught up to you and the injuries and, you know, you've lost a step and there's not that market for you. It is humbling. It is hard. And he is one of countless many, Mike, that are in that position that you see broken. I was just at Big 12 Media Days last week, totally different topic, but, you know, was chatting about Steve Sarkisian. And one of the members of the media said, man, going to Texas, like he had to self-medicate at USC, right? Just that pressure. And in the self-medication obviously led to a path of destruction and lost his job and, you know, circles back around and works his way back into this opportunity. But what happens with the stress of Texas? And, you know, that stress doesn't go away. The pressure doesn't go away. All it's going to do is escalate.
Self-medicating because of the stress at UW?
No, at USC.
Well, but he was self-medicating long before he got to USC.
Yes, he was.
So but
there
I'm not buying
went,
that.
There it went.
There's
to
no pressure
a whole
here.
Other level.
He could have done it, gone 0-12 every year. Nobody would have cared.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that one. Sorry.
You're not buying the turning to self-medicating to.
I'm buying it that people do that in general. I'm not buying that. That's what happened to Steve Sarkisian once he got to the pressure at USC.
Okay.
I think he was self-medicating before any pressure started at USC.
There's no question.
I'm not buying that. The problem with Richard and his exit from the league and kind of finding out that that's no longer going to be his identity is I guess I thought that wouldn't be a problem for him. Mm. Of all the players. And as you say it, it makes sense, right? Guy whose ego is extraordinary, being told, and as you said, humbled by the league, telling him exactly what he's worth. Okay, I can understand that side of it. But the other side is a guy who's so smart and so curious and so interested in different things, and whether it was going to be the fight of being part of the NFLPA or wherever he was going to choose to put his energy, I guess I figured that it would be not necessarily enough for him, but enough to keep him from that sort of level of whatever the word is, sadness.
Yes.
I don't know what the right word is, but to
I
keep
just call it brokenness.
Okay,
yeah,
brokenness. I would have thought that his interests and his intelligence would have been enough to keep him from that level of brokenness.
Correct. Correct. Because, you know, there have been plenty of other stories of players that can't leave their room. And I think in many cases, it's because what am I going to do now? What skill set do I have now? What talents and abilities and do I have now?
This is,
and what
this can has I defined me.
That's right.
But it hasn't. It's been his biggest definition. But gosh, Richard has defined any number of other ways, right?
Yes. But obviously, this also exposes how much that mattered. Right. And I think it's kind of pathological in some of the, you know, lying and I'm better than you. I'm bigger than you. I'm smarter than you. I can work my way around you. Right. I could do all of that. And then this door comes and slams. Right. Like I'm my own agent. I can negotiate a deal now like this. And that door slams on you. And it's like, yeah, sorry. That's just not the way the exit from this league works. It's pretty much brutal for 99%. And as I said, for those that have tens of millions of dollars and all the accolades and everything else, it becomes that much more difficult when that door closes.
So are you surprised?
I was. Yeah, when I asked you that initial question about your initial emotion.
I was definitely
surprised. Yeah, when I saw that was my first like, whoa, wow. Right, to put yourself in that position, to be that reckless with lives, your own and others, right? Yeah, I was very, very surprised and very sad as more and more of the details came out. And you're right, this is kind of the teeter-totter that we're on because it's criminal. I mean, this isn't lying to Kerry Champion about Jim Moore, right? I mean,
it's let's be clear, because I don't know how you feel about these definitions. This is how I operate in my own head, and I'm sure plenty of people will disagree with it. Josh Gordon has done things that are technically criminal, but I don't believe they put other people in danger. Does that make sense? Josh Gordon's done thing, and he's tested positive for drugs, not just performance enhancing, but recreational drugs, and people do cocaine or heroin. I mean, those things are illegal, right? they're generally not illegal because of the threat that other people are under. They're illegal because of what you can do to yourself and the problem to society, etc. The challenge here is that, and while I'm always willing to offer a level of sympathy and understanding to an addict like Josh Gordon, it's a little more challenging in this case. In fact, I would say I can't do it because Richard Sherman, maybe he's got alcohol. Maybe he's got an alcohol problem. He's an alcoholic. That's something worthy of a level of compassion, and especially when mixed with some of the other stuff we're talking about and exiting the league. But getting drunk and ruining your own life is different from getting drunk and threatening other people, trying to break down their door, driving after drinking what his wife said was two bottles of hard liquor, and crashing into a construction site fighting with cops. Yep. Those things don't get like brushed over just because you're an alcoholic. Oh, well, I was an alcoholic. Right. Yeah, and like that's fine, and that's that absolutely means that there should be a support system in place, but it doesn't excuse the actions that put other people's lives and health at risk. I can't do that.
Nope.
I'm not there.
Consequence, yeah, it's just consequences of all of those as well, right? And the impact on your wife and kids and in-laws and family and this community and where it holds you. And yeah, I mean, there's consequences to all of that. And that is why this is such a difficult conversation. And you're right. I'm really thankful we weren't on the air that morning when this came down with the initial news. And then even as he sits, you know, in over the course of those 24 hours and is not able to post bail and all of the situations, more of the details come out because it's brutal. It's just it's brutal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I said this the next morning to Paul Gallant. Almost as simultaneous, Salk, as that news came down and that headline came down, honestly, and I don't know how it was for you, but almost as simultaneous, I thought about Pete Carroll. Of the different people within this story, as you said, all the different tentacles that reach out, I just found myself, because of the number of times you and me sat with that man down at that facility on the air and off the air talking about Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And just, man, Pete, how? How are you doing this?
Well, let's be clear.
This guy is a rule one breaker. He breaks rule one. Mm-hmm. You don't have rules. You're the easiest parent there is. Seriously. Your kids go to the Montessori school. They don't, but they would. You would lead that kind of, like, there's no discipline, whatever. But you have one rule.
Protect the team.
And at every turn, he's throwing you, he's throwing the coordinators, he's throwing teammates under the
quarterback,
bus.
Yes.
Oh, the kumbaya, right? Room and kumbaya.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when this came out, honestly, I was like,
so you thought,
like,
of
man.
Pete, which makes sense. By the way, they should build a statue of Pete. I mean, they should already, that we already know that Pete's the greatest coach in the history of this organization. One of the greatest, should be in the NFL Hall of Fame sooner rather than later. But Pete, I mean, look, this is not, I'm not the first person to notice this, but three quarters of the Legion of Boom has now had major legal issues.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Isn't Browner in jail for?
Browner's in jail.
In prison.
Right. He's in prison.
Prison.
Earl Thomas, remember, was in bed with his brother and another woman, and his wife found out. That was a mess.
Yeah.
And then now you got the Richard Sherman. So three quarters of the Legion of Boom has had major legal trouble. The other, by the way, being Cam Chancellor, who's like the pillar of the community, like the exact polar opposite of any of that. You throw in Michael Bennett and the challenges that he brings to the table. Throw in Marshawn Lynch, who in no way has had any criminal activity like this, but certainly was a challenge to handle as a head coach. Put all of those guys on Golden Tate and
Percy
a few
Harvin.
Other Percy Harvin.
Chris Clemens.
Throw all of those
guys. Did you
mention
angry Doug Baldwin?
Was he a challenge at times in his relationship with the quarterback? Throw in a quarterback who they all think is kind of corny. Throw in Cliff Averill, who's like another pillar of the community. Like, what a bizarre group of human beings they managed to put together.
Bruce
on that
Irvin.
Team. Seriously. What a bunch of... Breno Giacomini was the one who took the most penalties of all those guys.
Just
what a
way.
Mess.
Pete loved it.
I know. He
just
thrives
the
in chaos.
Just the kaleidoscope of chaos. He told us that, right? He loved more than any team ever growing up. He loved the Raiders, right? Bay
chaos.
Area guy, and loved the Raiders and the personalities. Now Davis of the 70s and that whole cast of characters. They were nuts, right? They were just crazy. And that's what he loves. Mm-hmm. That's where he flourishes. That's where he's got a patience and a compassion and just a sense to bring people along. And when this news hit, I honestly was wondering, man, I'm just so curious, you know, when in
well, he doesn't have to deal with this, thankfully, for Pete.
He doesn't. He'll probably be asked about it.
Yeah, I know, but he's going to say, I reach out, I feel bad, and it's going to offer sympathy. But he doesn't have to handle the guy being on his team because
no, he doesn't.
The guy's not on his team.
Correct. But man, I don't know. That image in all of those conversations we had with him, and Pete's love for him. Pete loves him. And I bet you this hurt him like it was his own kid.
Mm-hmm.
I bet this just stung like this was his own, you know, just one his own kin. Like this guy, remember, he told us one time, like when we wake up the same way. Eyes wide open. Let's go. Like just go compete. I'm going to beat everybody. Like he has a fellowship with Richard that he just loves him.
I'm sure he does. But then when you see him and you see the footage of him banging on the door of the father-in-law's house, and repeatedly slamming his shoulder into it, trying to break in and yelling for the guy to come through.
You hear female family members behind screaming
and terror. Oh. I mean, you think about the kids.
You know, there's four kids in there.
Right, you think about how afraid they are and to see your, can you imagine seeing your dad acting that way? And,
you read the police report of your grandfather having a gun on the other side of the door, not knowing what's going to happen next.
All of those things are just incredibly terrifying. Awful. And I can't work up even a little bit of support. Regardless of the challenges that he may be dealing with mentally, time in life, chemically, etc., I can't bring myself at the moment to offer sympathy. Now, all of that being said, doesn't it hinge on what he chooses to do next? If Richard Sherman decides to be Richard Sherman about this,
yep.
Deny. There's no evidence that
point the finger
right point at everybody else.
Nobody knows the circumstances that led up this, and I'm not going to let you into it.
Makes excuses, and by the way, there may be some that are valid. I'm sure that money is a complicating factor. I don't know for a fact whether or not Sherm bought the home that his in-laws are living in, but I've heard that story. You know, those things I think are complicating, but not excuse worthy. And if he tries to point at those complications and use them as excuses, I don't think anybody should have much sympathy for him in the way this thing moves going forward. Now, if he pulls a Brandon Marshall, hey guys, I need serious help and I'm going to go seek that help and actually does it.
And that was his initial statement.
It was. If he follows through with that initial statement, doesn't offer excuses, doesn't... Then how could you not ultimately offer him a level of sympathy and support for what should be an incredible redemption story? Thankfully, nobody got hurt. I know people in my life that have been at the depths of drug addiction. I have a good friend who is a city council person in Los Angeles. He's one of the 12 city council people in LA. He was drunk and addicted to drugs nearly to the point of his own death. Found a way, and I'm sure he put other people in danger during that time, is before I met him. Completely turned around his life, got sober, has been sober ever since, and is now one of the people who's in the city council in LA. There's a decent chance he'll run for mayor in the next few years. So we know people, and I'm sure, Brock, you could come up with any number of folks you know who've been at the depths and found and put people in danger, and thankfully no one got hurt in this case.
Well, in this case, no one hurt physically, but emotionally, to Howdy's point.
Understood. Like, but you think that those emotional scars are healable through a level of accountability and sobriety?
I mean, he has
life
to
changes.
As you talk about this, and I hadn't even necessarily thought about this angle yet and this tentacle to the story. But yes, as you present it in that way, it will, you know, his next steps is leadership in the league. If that's what he still envisions, or, you know, if he still does want to try to play and, you know, at a minimum deal or whatever, you know, could possibly be out there this year, next year, whatever the next step is in media. Right, I know that was conversation, and there are going to be many outlets.
But I think those things are going to have to wait for him.
They will, and they will have to wait upon him owning this
completely.
That's right. And doing something that you said is not in his character. When he busted the coverage and was wrong against the Falcons, what did he do? He blamed everybody else to the point that Cam Chancellor's like, dude, enough. Okay, you screwed up. You messed up on this. right? And time again, when you did, when you belittled Jim Moore and you told him on the record you were going to ruin his life and you're going to end his career, and then you go about it and don't take any ownership of that, right? When you just blast your quarterback to Wickersham and everybody else, and you're the source behind the scenes, and now you don't really know. Well, we do know. We do know where so much of that was, and he never took ownership of any of that. You could duck behind it while you played. You know, it didn't really, certainly didn't stretch and reach to this level. But now you've hurt people. You've hurt your family. You've hurt your kids. You've hurt loved ones. You've hurt your community. And it's time to take total and complete ownership of it and be accountable to that. And you're right. You know, his next step is going to be dictated, I think, very much so, by the amount he takes responsibility for this and the consequences of this action.
I don't want to bet on whether or not he will. I don't have any idea how he will handle this next. But I think that you Brock, have correctly and really accurately struck upon where this conversation goes next. Is he able to do what he was not able to do before, take responsibility himself, own it?
And that is where, okay, and you kind of go back and you circle back to my 20-some years and being out of the league for a long time now and watching 40-year-olds, watching marriages disintegrate, watching finances disintegrate, watching mental health disintegrate, right? With lots of my peers and teammates and others and some that, you know, have done just some awful, horrendous things and breaking their marriages and just in their brokenness. And, you know, as I look at that kind of spectrum of people, in many cases, Salk, the ones that came out of it were the ones that had people, right? Not just themselves, but had their dearest of friends. And again, that's why I say like a Pete Carroll. If anybody's going to reach him, and I don't put that pressure on Pete because I don't know where their relational bond mm-hmm. is to this day, but I would think with a decade of history that they had and all they meant to one another, it's going to take somebody alongside of them, right? To just think, oh, I'm going to do this all on my own, or you know, I'm going to come to this epiphany now when my character and how I've handled so much of this. And I hope he's surrounded by people that likewise will help him hold himself accountable.
Well, we mentioned a few minutes ago one of the strongest characters of anybody I could think of, and that's Cam Chancellor. I'm not putting it on. It's not up to Cam to go reach out, and it's not his job to do this. But if he decides to do that, and if he chooses to go be that level of both accountability mm-hmm. and support yep. for his teammate, ex-teammate. Man, I don't know that I could think of anybody better to do that for him
yeah.
than someone like Cam.
And, you know, maybe his college teammate
which
as well.
Which to me is like the biggest compliment I could give to Cam Chancellor.
Sure.
Who's blocked sure. you on Twitter.
He did?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah,
he blocked you. Yeah.
Are you still blocked?
He's in the holdout.
Not by Cam. No, Cam no. and I are okay. fine. Just all Richard. Right. Richard yeah, blocked okay. me. Gotcha. Somehow Doug didn't block me, which is really bizarre. I don't think that guy likes me.
I mean, credit to Doug. Like, he didn't need to block you. He just took shots at you guys on air.
It's true.
Like, oh, the quarterback and the know-it-all? I don't like that.
That's so much better,
it's
though.
It's so much better.
So much better.
He didn't block you. He talked crap about
so
you.
So much more thank respect you, for that.
With yeah, a seriously. Quarterback and a know-it-all, I don't really like those guys.
Credit to Doug.
Cackling hyenas there, though. Jeez. So wait a minute. Nice of them to come to our support.
Nope.
Funniest thing they'd ever heard. Yes. Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it. Sheesh. Brock, you want to beef up your business meetings? We've talked meetings before, right? M-E-A-T-I-N-G, meetings. Famous Dave's can help you beef up your business meetings. Famous Catering is ideal when you want your meeting or event to be delicious and memorable and even better, and I think this is the key, stress-free. Because they offer customized delivery, pickup, or full service options. The Famous Q is designed to allow you to kick back, relax, and just crush some classic Q, whether you're diving into a brief or digging into brisket. Regardless, you are good to go. And you can, do you ever have that problem where you're like, you're the host, and so you're worried about all the other stuff? You don't end up enjoying the event? Hey, you don't want that. Enjoy the event. Just let somebody else deal with all the stress. They get smoking starters, fresh salads, barbecue bundles, slow-cooked goodness ready to party whenever you are. So that could mean Georgia chopped pork.
Always.
Could mean barbecued pulled chicken sliders.
For sure.
And it could certainly mean Famous St. Louis-style ribs, the only thing good to come out of St. Louis. Famous Dave's Authentic Barbecue is behind, although, you know, we're going to talk a little St. Louis later. There may be something else decent to come out of St. Louis. Mm. A couple of blues players that may have some role here on the future of hockey here in Seattle. Famous Dave's has locations in Everett, in Tukwila, in Tacoma, and of course,
at that ghost kitchen in Northgate.
At that ghost kitchen in Northgate, Seattle. For more information, check out FamousDaves.com. Leave the barbecuing to the best. Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue. Apparently, Brog, this is one of those days for sort of split feelings where it's, you can really take either side of an argument and feel like you're on pretty solid ground. And as you kind of see where the Mariners are at right now and continuing to play really good ball coming out of the break, right? They take 2 out of 3 from the Angels right off the bat. And in typical Mariners fashion, it's 2 close games and then they get their doors blown off in the other and they just wave the white flag and say, we don't care at all about the run differential. You go ahead and beat us by 10 runs and we'll come back and clip you tomorrow night by a couple. You know, there's a lot to like, obviously, about how they're playing and the style and this and that. In fact, you know, you can, and I've been saying it for a little while here, you can write a pretty good case for them to buy and try to make this team better.
Yep.
The flip side of that, and I just want to present the argument, and then we can kind of dig into where they should go, is that according to Baseball Reference, they have about a 6% chance of making the postseason. 6%. Okay? And worse than that, they're down to 2 starting pitchers that are worth a you-know-what. 2. Marco Gonzalez has been terrible. Justin Sheffield's been terrible, and he's on the IL. Justin Dunn's been lousy, and he's on the IL.
Oh, whoa! You watch
IL.
Your mouth.
He's been mediocre at
he's
best.
Sub-4 ERA.
He's been mediocre, and he's on the IL. And for the last few starts, you say Kikuchi's turned into a pumpkin. He's looked like a disaster. I mean, just awful.
Awful.
You're now left with 2 guys in your rotation that you feel pretty good about whenever they go out there, and that's obviously Flexen and Logan Gilbert. And I want to provide all of the kudos imaginable to both of them. Gilbert's start on Sunday, holy cow. Yep. Dominant ace-like stuff. Now, it was only for 5-plus innings, but dominant ace-like stuff from him against a decent Angels lineup that's obviously injured. Brock, how much can you invest in a team with 2 starters?
94 games in, Salk. I mean, we're nearing the century mark here. We're 94 games in, and you're 3 out of the wild card. 3 out of the wild card. You got Tampa and Oakland ahead of you. You've now bypassed Toronto and the Yankees, and even the Indians are in your rearview mirror. Not by much. What, half a game and a game and game and a half. And even the Angels are only 3.5 back. And the, you know, they are going to get Mike Trout back, some of their pieces. Mm-hmm. But you're sitting here nearly 94 games in.
But you have 2 pitchers.
Oh, Kikuchi will be back. He just got.
You sure about that?
Yeah, he got a little something.
You sure about that?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know that I am, to be perfectly honest with you. And
one of the 3 best lefties in baseball in April, May, and half of June. Okay.
And he looks either hurt or like he's turned into a pumpkin. He's not throwing as hard. He's not throwing with as much command. He's not throwing with the same level of confidence. It was as if being named an all-star was like an Achilles heel injury for him. We've seen it before. Remember everybody trying to get the, what's his name?
Send Segura
to the All-Star game. Yeah, it worked out. They sent him. Then he was a disaster from the moment they sent him to the All-Star game on out. The moment Yusei Kikuchi found out he was an All-Star seems to have been his undoing.
Or is the moment Aaron Judge rolled in here, Giancarlo Stanton rolled in here.
Maybe, but I mean, you know, it's not like the Angels lineup he faced coming out of the break. They're not a bad lineup, but when you take Trout and Upton and Rendon out of that lineup, you know, it's good, but it's not what it should be. No, I don't think so. I don't think
so. Roland Smith was saying that
those guys ruined him.
Yankees came in, he started pitching to avoid contact, and his mental approach the last 2 starts was night and day from the rest of the season.
I don't know what to think about
it
that.
It was interesting conversation.
To me, I'd rather hear that he was hurt. That is a level of mental softness that I don't want to hear
about.
Well,
that was part of the thing when he came here. He said he was intimidated by the size and stature of the major league players. It took him a couple of years to get over that, and now 2'6", 7", 280-pound dudes roll in.
So you want to bet on that as you're going to try to make a postseason run? So you understand the concern here, Brock. While you're right, 3 games out and playing right there with everybody else in your division, playing really good baseball and finding ways to win on one hand. On the other hand, 2 pitchers.
Yep.
2 starting pitchers.
You don't expect Marco to be this bad for the second half of the season, do you?
Well, I don't know that my life I mean, got he's got a little more right after I had a baby.
He's got a little more track record, does he not?
If
not
he does, but not this year. Bad. He has been awful from the start this year. And I say that with great respect, admiration, and love for Marco Gonzalez, who I think is a great person and a really good quality pitcher. There's something wrong with him right now. Mm-hmm. This isn't Marco Gonzalez. This isn't the guy we've watched essentially since he got here. This isn't him. Yep. That guy was a bulldog. And not just a Gonzaga bulldog, like a pitch like a bulldog. This guy, he doesn't have any of anything to offer when he gets out on the mound. He's getting shellacked.
Marco Gonzalez has 11 starts this year. He has yet to have a start without a walk. not Marco Gonzalez.
No, it's just not him. It's like he's been an invasion of the body snatchers. Like, he's a different person right now. And
When is Justin Dunn coming back? Because I'm not listening.
That is definitely a
could be a month.
Nobody knows.
Could be
nobody
a month.
Knows. Okay.
And maybe nobody knows.
We may find out
back.
More on that when what's the kid who's about to be ready to come off the 40-day or off the onto the 40-man roster? Sadler is going to come back here, and they're going to need to make some 40-man room. So we'll find out maybe whether or not somebody like Dunn or Sheffield ends up going to the 60-day DL in order to offer some more space on the 40-man. But Brock, there's no immediate hope. There's no immediate hope that your rotation is going to return back to what it was supposed to be.
Yep. And we know how fickle those bullpens can be, right? And to count on any of them and those kind of additions. As I looked at that number, and you sent that note last night, 6%, right? That's the odds right now?
According to MLB or to a baseball reference. Now, let me also, before you jump into it, be clear. I think these odds things are the stupidest thing in the world. They're stupid. We see it. Oh,
what's your percentage chance to win this game? You hate it. You just hate all
these numbers. It's so preposterously dumb.
And you all know I love analytics. I mean, that's what I've really built my pedigree
doing
on.
He's always doing them.
You're always doing analytics.
You want to do analytics? You want to do them? As I looked at that number, and as I look at these standings, I kind of broaden it out, and I ask you, and I think these are the conversations over these 2 weeks leading up to the trade deadline, or even less than that now. What moves can we make? What tangible moves could we make with a starting pitcher, maybe two, that close the gap with Tampa Bay and Oakland?
What if you need three?
That's not tenable. And
you don't need three. You want to look at the Mariners' starting pitching situation. It may not be what you want it to be. But the Rays' best pitcher is a 42-year-old, and they have nobody else after that. Like, it's not like all of Major League Baseball is flush with a full rotation of starting pitchers.
That's a good point.
Tampa Bay, Oakland, Toronto.
Oakland has great starting pitching. Tampa Bay and the Blue Jays don't. They have terrible starting pitching.
Agreed with that. That's
and everyone's going to have attrition the rest of the season because all these starting pitchers are going to have problems with
What if you have attrition? Logan Gilbert's never done this before. Logan Gilbert's never thrown this many innings before in his life. Now you're counting, and you need him. If Logan Gilbert isn't essentially perfect every time out, you're
which
like,
he's been, his team's won
but
his
they're
last
perfect
nine
in
starts.
His starts.
That's right.
Undefeated.
Nine starts.
Unbelievable. Well, eventually, I promise you, Logan Gilbert will have a hiccup.
You think so?
I promise you it
How
will happen.
Dare you, Mike?
It's going to, and it won't mean
so
that he's
negative.
Bad.
You're so negative.
I am negative. Eventually,
that flat fastball catching up to him.
Eventually, Chris Flexen will not have a quality start. It will happen eventually, I think. I mean, that dude just keeps cruising. Quality start after quality start. He's got a little Doug Fister.
Yes, he does.
To him, doesn't he?
With a little more velo.
Yeah.
He's got the height.
Just the height and the consistency. He's never
the movement.
He's generally not incredible. No, the world's never going to think of him as an ace or a top of the rotation kind of guy. But he just kind of quietly does his thing, delivers, moves it along.
The fist assistants love him, too.
I don't know whether he has any fist assistants.
Maureen Fista.
Maureen and Noreen.
Maureen.
I don't know whether he's got that.
Is he pitching in Japan? Where is he pitching now? Is he
Dougie?
Still around?
Little Dougie Fista?
Yeah, it was Little Dougie.
I don't know. I think he's pitching by the somewhere in Chelsea or Rivia.
Chris Young and Wade LeBlanc.
Right.
Kevin Millwood.
Didn't LeBlanc throw a no-hitter this year or something? I think he had or close to it.
I saw Wade LeBlanc with the Cardinals against the Cubbies. Yeah, saw
anyway,
Aaron Harang.
How much are you willing to bet on a team that right now has two? Howdy raises a good point. You don't need three. You're right. You don't need to get to five quality starters night in, night out. That's a good point. But you probably need more than one more. You need one more and Kikuchi/Marco to get back to being what they can be. And I think that's a tough gamble to take.
And
right,
and most importantly, you need a market to turn in your favor for starting pitching.
Well, it's not
because no you are
way.
Not.
That's not going to happen.
No, no, you're
not gonna, Naga, no chance.
You're, well, you're no not going to give away your prize prospects. You're not going to do that.
No, obviously.
With the 6%, you're not.
You're going to have
that.
To give up something, right? So, how much are you willing to give up, knowing that the odds say 6%, but the standings say 3 games?
I don't give up anything that I think is going to be valuable next year.
Correct.
No way.
Okay.
Well,
what about Mitch Haniger?
Now, if I'm trading Mitch Haniger, I'm getting, so the deal that was proposed in The Athletic is something to the effect of, I'm going to get a veteran and a couple of prospects back.
That was with San Diego. And
Will
you get
Myers
back Will
is the
Myers.
Guy you get. And then a couple of prospects, one who's a top prospect who's had Tommy John.
So the idea there for San Diego, just so I'm clear, is they get a marginal upgrade over Myers and Haniger, right? He's better, but he's not like... he's not like a world's better.
Better and better in the field. Right. Better all around.
They get a better all-around player, but probably somewhat equivalent hitters, etc. And the contracts are roughly even-ish in terms of years left.
With the money, yeah.
And then you give up a couple of prospects in order to get marginally better.
And you still have that guy next year for them.
Yeah, and both teams would still have their guy next year. Are you sure you want to do that? I looked at that. I saw that same deal, and I thought Corey did a nice job with the article and I don't think I make that deal.
I absolutely make that deal.
I know.
And it's only predicated on the fact that if you don't think that Mitch Haniger is going to be here long term, then just get something that's close to the same and some more stuff.
All right. So you're going to add a couple of marginal prospects, but those guys
are top five prospects in their system. So if you get a top prospect or a couple of guys, you're like, you know what? This guy's going to be on my team in the next 3 years and for five, and I get relatively the same production. Yeah, I'm doing that deal. Absolutely. There's just a lot of value that comes with not punting on this season and using what you have to get better in the future.
And maybe it's not possible, but I'm so hung up on if I'm going to deal Haniger, I want to get back a young major league ready/experienced player. Somebody who within a year can put up the same kind of numbers as Haniger. And I think you see how long it takes young players to develop. The Acuñas and a couple of those guys are so rare. Right. They come up to the bigs and immediately start not just contributing but dominating. It's not necessarily indicative of your future to not dominate right away. Most major league players just don't do that. It takes a while in this game.
Yep.
And so to find somebody, even prospects, like, man, you're just pushing this thing back. And I feel like you're right on the verge of being ready to go. Whatever you do, you can't take a major step back at the deadline. You've come too close, and you owe your players not doing that. You're right. If you're going to deal a Mitch Haniger, you probably need to bring back someone like Myers. But gosh, I keep hoping there's somebody out there that I don't know of, that I don't know who's available, but is Haniger 2 years ago. Right, someone who's starting to contribute, has gone through their sort of ups and downs of being a young major leaguer, and is just starting to come into their own as a veteran and has the same kind of upside as Haniger, except they're just a little bit younger and the other team just wants the experience and says, okay, we're going to go with the guy who's fully cooked instead of the guy that you've taken off the grill to kind of finish heating up in the tinfoil over here.
The more realistic.
By the way, that's
situation.
A great metaphor right there.
That's really nice.
That's like the best
that.
Metaphor I've come up with on the fly in a while. That's pretty
good.
That brilliant, Mike. Right, like it's at rare, but take it off and just
it's going to keep. It's going to
keep heating.
It's going to rise like 6 degrees.
Yes,
in there.
Yes. Don't you like that?
If the Mariners believe that they're a playoff team next year and moving forward,
they have to believe they're a playoff team next year.
The resource you have to spend right now without having to be sellers is to take on money. And if you take on money, you can get a veteran player who's close to what Mitch Haniger is and add prospects with it. Because some team is going to want to give up J.D. Martinez's contract.
Can you turn around and use some of those players, though, those prospects you got back to get some pitching?
Once you're good, sure.
Can't
absolutely.
You do it now? Because I'm not willing to just give up on this year. I think you've got a problem if you fully give up on this year at the deadline. I really do. I think you've got a clubhouse problem. I don't know how you go look J.P. Crawford in the eye and tell him, sorry, dude. I don't know how you look Kyle Seager in the eye and tell him, sorry, dude. Sorry, we just didn't believe in you guys. 6% chance. Sorry. I don't know how you look those guys in the eyes and tell them that.
I don't know
how
you change the narrative of what people believe on the outside.
How do you tell a free agent coming in next?
Hold
year?
On, I don't care what people believe on the outside. If I'm Jared Poto,
Jared
I don't care.
Agent? Do you care about Jared Kelenic?
People like that, yes. I thought you meant the fans. I'm willing to ignore.
Yeah, he's talking
the
about the free agents you need to recruit.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Now, yeah, maybe you can convince them that next year you're really all in on. But gosh, I think it's a hard sell.
And you're already battling that they're going to turn their hat over and come hat in hand, and that's the reputation of this team on the market.
Gosh, I mean, as you're watching the All-Star game and you're watching Taijuan Walker, like, man,
sickening.
That of all the guys, I could live with all of the other ex-Mariners in that game.
Yeah. There were a lot.
There were
of
a bunch,
them.
But none of them bothered me. Well, Chris Taylor still bothers me, but what are you going to do? I mean, that's just a bad deal. You just got to. Jerry he owns that one. What are you going to do? He screwed that one up. That's okay. That happens. Taijuan Walker bothers me. Like, gosh, you could have had that guy in the offseason. Yes. Why didn't you?
Yes.
Because first of all, you could have had both him and Paxton if you just paid for it. But okay, fine. He's better than Paxton. Yep. Why would you have not bet on his athleticism over James Paxton's injury history?
You just watched him pitch for you healthy. He was just here.
Absolutely nuts to me.
You removed every single thing that you didn't
know
about
him.
Totally
agree. Totally agree.
And you chose to get James Paxton because the Maple Grove would come back?
Well, I hope that wasn't the reason.
Paxton would sign a one-year deal and Walker wanted three.
They should have given it to him.
Committed to.
How good would you feel right now if you had Walker for 2 more years?
I feel
great about it.
How good would I feel right now if James Paxton was healthy?
But he's not.
But he's never been healthy. You couldn't tell them that in March.
I could have told you that. I absolutely could.
Every one of us could tell you that. This isn't a guy with perfect health.
I did tell you that.
This isn't a guy with perfect health who you're like, hey, what are you going to do? It all checked out. This isn't Rashad Penny, where everything said in college that there was no reason he would get hurt, and unfortunately he has.
Don't even say the name.
This is a guy who's always been hurt. He got hurt falling down over those like
ladders.
Ladder drills.
I get him. And was Saunders the sprinkler or something?
Yes.
Was the hula hoop
Saunders
or something?
Was
Saunders was the sprinkler.
Yes.
These Canadian guys,
who
man.
Who got their finger caught in the net when they were swinging? That was another bad one.
That might have been Paxton. I'm not sure. Anyway, that was the only one that drove me crazy. But don't you owe it to this team to make up for that? You have to. And if it requires Juan Thin or a couple of guys like that, you have to do that.
John Gray? How about, have you seen him over the last 6 starts?
Love John Gray.
Whew. Whew. Pretty good. You tell me that the starting pitching market is just brutal, though, right?
No, it's brutally expensive.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not
brutally
there's
expensive.
Nobody there. Everybody needs it, and everyone knows they're going to need it even
But if all of the buyers hold firm, then eventually that thing will turn on them, right? If you're Jerry, for everything I understand, basically this whole trade market shut down for not the All-Star game, but the draft. The GMs have to go deal with the draft. And they're not fully invested in that year round, right? They've got a scouting director, amateur scouting staff, who's really doing most of the work on the draft. But in the week or two leading up to it, that's when the GM really has to focus on it more. It's not to say they do zero leading up to it, but in that moment, they've got to really focus all their attention. So essentially, the trade market shuts down for the draft. Sorry, guys. We're out for a little bit. We've all got to do this. So where the Mariners are making calls, and I've been given every indication that they have been making calls to try to look for starting pitching. Essentially, nobody was answering their phone for a little while, and just no one's ready to set that market yet. So once they are, I got to believe that the Mariners want to make a deal here to bring in some starting pitching. But how many?
We got 10 days.
How low on... That's true.
Gotta go.
How low on your starting pitching depth chart can you get before you say, I don't know how I can commit to this team anymore because nobody on it can pitch.
Yep.
It's a really tough spot that Jerry's in. And oh, by the way, still doesn't have a contract. Just throw that in there just for fun.
Jerry, just go run the trade deadline. Then we'll decide if you can stick around.
So he's got these crazy 10 days, right? How about the 4-day stretch that Ron Francis has?
Oh, my God.
Good luck.
Can you imagine this, Brock? Now that you've sort of seen it, can you imagine doing his job right now?
No.
It is so, and I'm glad I've kind of given you some of the.
Do you remember seeing like Tim Ruskell and John Schneider following the NFL draft? Do you remember looking at how rugged and ragged those guys were? They were walking zombies.
7 rounds with a complete roster already.
Yes, as they just tried to fill in a few blanks, but they spend weeks and this iteration and that iteration and this plan and that plan.
This guy's got hundreds and hundreds of available players.
Yes,
plus the draft.
Plus how much in salary?
Plus trades. Plus he's got to deal with the salary cap where he's got to get up to 60-ish, but not exceed 81. It is remarkable. And then a few teams threw, you know, some surprises in there. So, you know, I don't want to go through every player that I'd want. I'm throwing that up online. And
be
we're doing this whole draft show, which is
this,
fun.
You know what's going to happen.
What?
Kyle's going to make a face over there like you make whenever I bring pre-draft guys on and they
no,
start
I
spouting
know.
Some names.
I'm not going to start throwing out names
like,
that no one's ever heard of.
Do but, something about
but there
this.
Have been two or three Fix names this. That are big names that have come up. The first being Carey Price, who is a, you know, long-standing goaltender with the Canadiens, had some incredible seasons, has been one of the better goaltenders in the game.
British Columbia guy.
He's
you're not bringing a habitant here. You hate him, so let's scratch him off the list.
I just be clear. I hate him. I do hate him.
I know.
That's true. I do hate him. I also don't think they should do it. I think, and if he didn't have the hip injury, then fine. But don't hip injuries scare you a lot
for
in
a
general,
goalie?
And especially
groin,
for a
groin
goalie?
And hip, groin and hip.
I mean, but in general, Brock, don't hip injuries scare you?
Yes,
they're not one of those things you just come back from.
No, because those usually have scarring. They usually have lots of issues. They usually have spurs. They usually, yeah, that's not something you know, that as you get older, gets better. It gets worse.
Yeah.
And then the itises kick in, and you know how much I hate the itises. You know,
my family.
So, ankylosis,
bursitis,
spondylitis,
arthritis, tendonitis, all the itises kick
who
in.
Who was it who had the really bad hip injury here? Maybe it wasn't here.
Percy had hip surgery.
Yeah, he did. Who was it who just like... He just like moved. There was a really good player who like just took one bad step. Oh, this is a Patriots player years ago. Gosh, I'm trying to remember who it was. He took like one really bad step and he was just essentially done.
Wow.
God, I'll think about who it was. I'll see if I can come up with the name. But hip injuries scare me. The money that you would have to spend, the commitment over time for Carey Price. I think there are other pretty good goalies available. No, maybe not quite at his stature. But enough that I'm not taking the risk on Carey
so
Price.
Can we do this?
Yeah.
Can you kind of hockey for dummies here a little bit for some of our market? I know we have passionate hockey fans, and you put together a good list of guys. And this kind of circles back, and I'm not going to make a hockey conversation a football conversation. Mm-hmm. But if you can, is there any parallel to when, hey, okay, what do you want, right? Like circle back to that conversation. Jim Moore is out. What do you want? What style of team do you want? What kind of players do you want? As you look at this, is there a position? Is there a size? Well, is there a speed?
Yeah, let me give
you
a way
need
that
you
a
want
bunch
this
of those
shape.
Things. Yeah, you need a bunch of those things. So let me try to answer that. First of all, you need a captain. You need somebody where it's his team.
Okay.
Like he's the man who runs the room and he's the guy. Hockey teams, great hockey teams have a captain. And it's a really important thing to a hockey team in
a
way.
And that can be bought or drafted.
There's a couple guys out there. I mean, you got Landeskog is a possibility, and Mark Giordano is a possibility. So there's probably two guys that could come in and immediately be a captain of your team for at least a year, if not more. If it's Landeskog and you're spending the money, you got him for the next few years because he's going to cost big money as an unrestricted free agent.
Okay.
So you got. I think you need one of those two guys. Giordano's easy. He's a defenseman from Calgary. He's available. He's only got, I think, a year left on his deal. So if you want him, you can try to sign him. If you want to flip him, you can probably flip him. And in the meantime, you get a guy that is a captain. He understands what it means to sort of own the room and present the type of veteran leadership that it seems to be more important on a hockey team than any other team. That C is so meaningful in that sport. So I think you need to make sure you get one of those two guys.
Okay.
Or both, by the way. You could probably get both of them if you really wanted to. I would probably go with Giordano just because defenseman and just an opportunity to have you know, the flexibility moving forward. But you've got to have a captain, somebody who's going to own the squad.
Okay.
So that's one. Two, you got to find some two-way centermen. I know it sounds sort of like really in depth, but you've got to find guys who can play on both ends of the ice. This isn't football where you just play offense or defense, right? It's not even basketball. Well, maybe it's a little like basketball, but the complete player, especially up the middle at center, is hard to find. Guys who are willing to really put the effort in defensively and can score goals and pay the price, kill penalties, and be on power play, there just aren't enough of them. So if you have a chance to find one of those guys, you probably need to. I would say the best example of that I've seen anyway in this draft is Yanni Gourde, who's with Tampa Bay, is available. Okay. Just won a cup. right? He's a two. Is he perfect? No. Costs a little bit of money, but he's a two-way centerman, and you're going to need somebody like that. There's a few others in this draft. You're going to need some just big physical defensive players, guys who are going to just maul you. I don't know that this guy is like the best player out there, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce his name right, but when I see 6'6", 236, playing defense with some physicality, Nikita Zadorov, yes, please. I like that. I like 6'6", 236. That's like Zdeno Chara.
6'9".
That's like Chara. And I personally got to witness what he did for a team over the course of a decade where he took them from being a joke to being great. So I like a big guy like that, and you're probably still going to need some scoring. I know the big debate here will be on Vladimir Tarasenko, really, really gifted, creative scoring forward who's been injured and you know wants out of St. Louis. There's some stories they'll take him and flip him. I'd take him. I like Tarasenko. I always have. The fact that he's available, I think, is awesome. There's risk there because of the shoulder and his production's down a little bit. But he's a really, really gifted player. And then you just got to put some people around him that are strong enough and physical enough to protect him.
When this is all said and done, and the dust settles,
mm-hmm.
draft, free agency,
trades.
Expansion.
Because some of these trades. Guys, they're going to get picks yes. and or players just to take.
Correct. When the dust settles on this, can this be a top 10 roster in the league? Top 5 roster in the league?
I don't know. I mean, you look at
all these names. You spend a bunch of time looking at it. Now, you don't know the draft picks as well and everything else. But, you know, do you think when the experts, when this all gets done, right, and Walter Football drafts and puts a grade on this
let's say top 15. Team. I think they could probably be top half of the league. There's some really good players on this list.
Well, yes. And it's how you're going to do it. I mean, Ron Francis, I was listening yesterday on Wyman and Bob, and they had a great guest on who says, a GM's going to look at this and fight the urge. You're not drafting an all-star team.
That's right.
You don't want to come on and just draft the biggest names and the most talented players. You're assembling a team.
Yep, it's absolutely true. So there are some all-stars on here. I mean, James Van Riemsdyk's a really popular name. He's really good.
Assemble
good
the dream
forward.
Team Eagles.
You can't do that. You got to have some muckers. You got to have guys who are grinders, guys who are willing to fight, guys who are willing to be dirty, guys who will go in the corner, fourth-line energy guys. You got to find all of those things.
Has their staff that they have now hired, coach and assistants and everything else, they've now put together and put in place before all of this chaos, does that give you any indicator of the direction they go?
Not enough. It seems like they want to forecheck. It seems like they want to play with some level of speed, but I don't know how physical they necessarily want to be, but you can't survive being not physical in the NHL. You can't survive with no speed. So, like, I don't know, man. I think we'll get a chance. Some of it, I think, is dependent on who was going to be available. The list is good. It's not an all-star team, though. I don't look at what's available out there and say, okay, all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
There's really a good mix of everything. And by the way, if you want to assemble an all-star team, good luck. You can't make it under the cap.
Yeah.
I started playing around with one of these cap things where you like
choose all. Did not.
Dude, I've been spending a lot of time on this. Like I'm super Howdy into it. It's awesome.
Like Howdy with his NFL draft.
Yeah. So I was using one of the like cap manipulator things where you start drafting a team, and I made like one move that was sort of way outside what all of the mock drafts.
Whoa!
And it basically like instead of I had to be at 81, right? I got to 84.5. Okay, sorry, can't do it.
Yep.
And essentially the difference was I signed one high priced unrestricted free agent that wasn't necessarily, you know, he's not in the cards for them. I forget who it was, but it was a name that I liked. And I was like, oh, might have been Matt Duchene, but I was just like, oh, I want that guy. Didn't work. Yeah. So you really got to be careful if you are Ron Francis, because you can very quickly get, I don't know, he's got the time. He's not like, it's not going to accidentally go over the cap. But I think that idea of the all-star team thing is, I think it's harder to get than you would think just because of the money these guys are owed.
Good thing Cecily and Avery aren't around because Dad's down in the basement working on the cap.
Dude, I've been completely obsessed with this. Like, it's awesome. It's so fun. Like,
it's about a Zoom meeting with Clayton going through databases left and right.
I know, John, how do you duplicate? Construct your database?
Right, yes.
Could you send me a template?
Yeah. John, do you like Tarasenko? Do you think it's too much if I were... Do you think I could renegotiate his deal? But
John,
also
John, these hockey names, that would be...
All right, last thing. Last thing, and we'll move on. The one guy I will say I really want out of this draft is Jordan Eberle. I really want him from the New York Islanders. If they don't get him, the Islanders had like a bunch of players I really, really liked, But Eberle would be right near the top of my list. Good top six winger who will score for you 20 goals consistent. I love his game. So just one player just I like. This is my Tyler Lockett for you, Brock.
Oh, good.
I just like Jordan Eberle, and I would really like to see him end up as a Kraken.
And you'd be okay if there's not one Habitant on the team.
Oh, yeah, you should take whoever's on that team, just get rid of them. I'm sorry, we won't be selecting anybody from the Montreal
The idea that, I mean, maybe they do is they take him and flip him.
Good.
That you suggested, which would be infuriating for a team.
Yeah.
I have to make this guy available to the expansion team that gets to take him from me, and they don't even want him.
Yeah.
They just take him for free
and
flip him.
But a lot of times they don't want the guy.
Oh, my gosh.
But a lot of the players they've left exposed, they don't want. You got to remember, a lot of the players that are available, they want off their team. They've had to pay them more than they want to.
Take this contract.
Yes, so they want to get rid of some of these guys. This is going to be a blast. I can't wait. All right, we're finishing off today with a Brock Heward written version edition of Which Is Better.
Well, you can mix up the questions a little. I mean, this is like your
baby. This is your deal, man. You are jumping into the deep end of the pool.
Okay, all right. I'll do it. There are a lot of folks on Twitter that were feeling this.
There was one.
Oh, there's a lot more.
I mean, there's one.
Me. Well, there's a lot more that tweeted me. That
really?
Didn't include you on it.
Is that what happened?
Yep.
I don't know. This is classic Brock responding to one person and treating it as the masses. But all right.
So many.
Here we
so
go.
Many.
A Brock Heward written version of Which Is Better. Starting with this, which is better, the Open Championship or the PGA Championship?
The Open.
The Open, I think, is better than the Masters. I love the Open.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What did you just say?
I think the Open's better than the Masters.
No.
Okay. I think so.
No. Okay. What do you think wrong?
It's
the Masters tees off the whole season. The azaleas are in full bloom. It's the most beautiful place in the world. No, the PGA is...
No, he's got the most beautiful filter in the world.
The Open at Royal St. George's, like,
this was not the best place for the Open.
Next, but year, next year at the old course?
The 150th at the old course in... Yeah, dude, I don't know. My list of majors...
I mean, everything's better than the PGA champion. The Players' Championship's better than the PGA champion.
I agree with that. I love that course. I think I would go Open 1, Masters 2, U.S. Open 3, and then...
You put the Open the best of all the majors?
Yeah, I love it. I love Lynx Golf. I think it's
great.
I'd
probably put it ahead of the U.S. Open.
I love it. I love the whole Lynx Golf thing.
Huh.
I think it's fun.
Chambers is just in your blood.
Yeah. Well, it's my favorite. Like, I love that stuff. I think
Lynx
Golf
is awesome.
And
you love that it's in the morning as well.
I like that.
Just wake up and get your cup of coffee and watch some golf.
Don't you love the creativity? I love my... So, obviously, Jordan... You can't crack on Jordan after this, right? You're not going to give him grief for coming in second, are you?
It was a disappointing back nine on Saturday.
Yeah, the 2-foot par miss.
But, dude, he was fantastic on Sunday. He did everything in his power to win that, and unfortunately, Morikawa never made a mistake.
Yep.
So I know you're not going to crack on Jordan for how he was 13 under in a major and lost, right?
No, I won't.
Okay,
I won't.
Good.
But Saturday was disappointing.
The end. He missed a couple bogey putts. Yeah. Anyway. What I loved and what I think is so cool about the whole Lynx course thing is his comment about how it's about shot making, not swing.
Yep.
How he thinks about his shots rather than his swing. And I don't know. I think that whole difference makes British golf more interesting.
And that's why, I mean, it plays to your strengths. You're a shot maker. It's not about your swing. You go to gamble. You go to Chambers.
Are you done?
Results guy. Is that a process?
Are you done?
Shot maker. Are you
done?
Swinger. Yes.
Are you quite done? Kudos to Morikawa. What a mature kid, huh?
Oh, my gosh. He's won 2 of 8 that he's played in now, huh?
First time he'd ever played basically Lynx golf.
I laughed out loud when he called it the British Open.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Brits hate
but like,
that.
I don't know. I don't.
Oh, it's fun. I got to come back to the British Open. I was like, oh,
Did you send us the bit, Salk? You sent us. Was it you that sent the bit with that fake comedian? Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Who was asking Morikawa. He was like giving all the wrong stats about his career.
Yes.
Really funny.
So you're named after Colin Montgomery.
No. It's like, oh, you've had 15 holes in one. Like, now I've had two. What? So funny.
He just had a smile and he did it with a laugh.
He seems like a good
cool,
kid, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's got
good
cool
energy.
Charisma.
Yep. All right. Which is better, Eli or Peyton, at least as it relates to their new Monday Night Football simulcast?
I'm going to say Peyton on that one. But don't sleep on Eli. Eli's doing this thing. Eli is going, unlike Peyton, who's just dabbled in media, and he's got his own. Do you know that Peyton has his own Omaha Productions?
Well, that's how he's making all the money off this deal.
Correct.
Yeah.
So he's got his own deal, his own entity. But Eli is like jumping in. Eli's just decided to make home up in New York and be a part of the whole scene up there in the north, which is rather fascinating.
Well, as he should. I mean, Eli wasn't very good at football. He's going to have to be good at media.
What two super?
Speaking of the Manning brothers, they do this, the College Bowl or something. I've never watched the show. I've seen the commercials.
It's with Peyton and
his
Cooper.
Cooper. And it's the first. Now I've heard Brock for years tell us that it is not pronounced Cooper.
Right.
And Cooper. Now for the first time you see on it, he's like, it's Peyton Manning and my brother Cooper. And it's like, oh, that's the first time I actually hear it on tape.
Yes.
And Brock, you're absolutely right. It's Cooper. Cooper.
And I'm screwed because it's not Cooper and it's not Cupper.
It's Cooper.
It's in between Cooper and Cupper.
It's like Coop.
But he does do a podcast, like a video podcast called Soup with Coop.
Oh, so it's just all pronounced. So it doesn't even rhyme. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Get out of here
with
that.
Soup
with Coop. God, I hate the Mannings.
Soup with Coop.
Whoa, watch your mouth.
What?
Jeez, I get to go to his induction ceremony and like, 2 weeks.
His induction, what, into the Royds Hall of Fame?
Into the Hall of Fame.
Oh. You're going to Canton, Brock?
Yes. One day. It's like a 24-hour trip.
I hope somebody mentions that whole story.
With the kicker, McManus, and some other.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to say Vanderjagt.
Right.
Wait, what?
That would be a pretty funny thing. I give Peyton credit,
with the
though.
Idiot kicker?
That would
You'd
be
see
funny.
A lot of former teammates. That would
be fun. That's pretty cool.
Really fun.
Very cool. Which is better, attending a championship game or attending an all-star game? You're going to have to answer this one, Brock, because you're the only one I know who's done it.
All-star game was bizarre. It was so quiet. You had all these stars out there, right? And you watch like pregame, and there's a cool buzz, and in the Rocky Stadium, like 50,000 people there, and Guerrero Jr., Tatis, and all this juice and energy, and then the game started and went to zero, and I was like,
is it a corporate crowd, or was it just because there's no quote unquote
there's
home
no rooting
team?
Interest,
right?
Like, what rooting interest do you really have now? Marquez and Story, you know, Story was in the Home Run Derby the night before, so he had a Rocky, and it kind of got juiced for him. But honestly, it took like 4 or 5 innings before, okay, now there's finally some plays. And I'm kind of getting into it. And near the end, there was some juice. But the scene was amazing. The memory for Titus was phenomenal. But no, I don't think I'll be doing that again.
I don't, you know, it's funny. The flip side of that is that the TV production of it was great.
I bet.
It really, I mean, the whole, their ability to get these guys mic'd up during the games, I know and I understand why they can't do that in a regular season game, but it's awesome. It was so great.
Mm.
And the guys really, they all acquitted themselves very well. Freddie Freeman was great, and all of them, everybody they put a mic on during the game, I thought handled it really well, and that's been the case for a couple of years. Yeah. I just found myself wishing that J.P. Crawford was out there, because I think he would have been awesome at that. How much would you have enjoyed a mic on him for an inning?
No question.
I think it would have been really good.
Yeah.
Which is better, fresh summer fruit or fresh summer seafood? That's a tough one, Brock, because
this crab right out of the water. Sweet,
but nothing beats the peach season here in Seattle.
Yakima corn I had this weekend, unbelievable.
Nothing beats the peaches here.
Sweet onion.
We're just about in peach season, Howdy.
Yeah, it's getting in full swing.
Yeah, we're just about.
Where are we at on the Brix rating?
Brix rating is probably not where it's gonna be, but now
it's getting up there.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good peach this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, not juicy. It's still a little sour, but it was good.
Peach around time.
You go fruit. You'd even go like a tray of fruit versus. Oysters right out of the water, spot shrimp, salmon caught in the Sound that day, that kind of Dungeness crab.
Yeah, I mean, those things are great. I'm going to choose fruit in this case. Okay. Yeah, right.
It's just the window is narrower.
Yeah.
It's true. For the fruit.
Right, you got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
And the gap between grapefruit and bad fruit is dramatically different than it is with seafood.
True. I added a new one to
you
the
can
repertoire.
Get good seafood the rest of the year. But really,
no,
the
no,
fruit
no.
gets...
It's,
yeah, you can.
It's fresh in the summer. No, you
I don't know longer. That I can taste the difference that much.
It's better.
It's better.
Definitely
but
better.
But like the difference between a peach you get in August in Seattle and a peach you get in December... I mean, the one in December, you might as well like throw a curveball
Well, you
got to
wait 2 weeks.
It's a rock.
So it's not, yep. Yeah, exactly. So rock hard.
You can't eat that. That's not the same, bro.
By the way, I added a little something. I think you guys have had my halibut, right? With the panko crust. I think I've done that for
just
you
Just for the halibut.
Yep. I add a little something to it now. macadamia nut, crushed macadamia nut. Whoa. So you have like a panko macadamia nut crusted, and it is.
I like where you're going with that.
Pretty ridiculous.
Which is better, Howdy Fixin' Zunino or Service Fixin' Nelson Cruz?
Yeah, way to go, Howdy. I give Howdy.
No.
Absolutely.
All-star home run, dude. Howdy, how much did you walk around the house like a rooster?
I was peacocking everywhere. Absolutely.
The all-star hitting a buck 90.
Yeah.
Yep. Hello.
Yep.
Ops 17 plus like 130.
Dongs.
Awesome.
Whoa.
Really good.
Yep.
I'm so glad I don't have to watch that guy play anymore. Honestly, it makes me happy not to have to watch him play.
Oh, my gosh. You're the worst.
I couldn't stand watching
Tom
him.
Murphy is a joy.
I didn't say that, but I really, really did not like watching Mike Zunino. Yeah. He was a really tough watch for me. Good guy. Tough watch.
All
right. So nice job, Hattie. You fixed him. All right, that's it. That's all for us. When we meet next week, Brock, we'll be ready for training camp. We'll have a Kraken team to discuss and everything they've done in the draft and the expansion draft and what they've got moving forward. The Mariners will be on the verge of the trade deadline. So really, next week is going to be awesome. I can't wait. We're in a really good time right now for sports. Like a ton going on. So this was fun. Thanks, dude.
Always is, buddy. Always
is. All right, we'll catch all you guys next week. And until then, hey.
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!